All right, welcome everyone. We are on Tess Ahmed Aleph. We are on 9A and joined here in person with Noah and with Melissa. And NCSY kids are downstairs. Hopefully we won't hear them too much. But it's a bustling building tonight, Baruch Hashem, with Torah learning. So we actually find ourselves almost in the middle of Tess Ahmed Aleph. Let me give a little bit of a summary of where we find ourselves, because we're a little bit in the middle of a sugya right now. But don't worry, the halacha is actually going to transition into a very classic story in the Talmud that's important for all of us to know. I see Marina from our Thursday morning Agadata crew. This was the Agadata that we learned this morning. So you're going to get a little bit of chazara in right now. So we left off was the Mishnah on Ches Amid Beis on 8b said that there's two opinions there. So the main opinion of the Tanakh in the Mishnah is that Sfar Nichtavim B'Cholasha, that Sifrei Tanakh, including a Sefer Torah, can be written in any language. You can write a Sefer Torah in theory in English if you wanted to. Crazy, no? Not crazy, of course, it's written here in the Mishnah, but imagine that. However, Rav Shimon Gamliel, he took a stricter position. He said, no, the only language it could be translated into is Greek. The issue we have is that if you look in a Braisa that the Gemara quotes at the bottom of the base, the Braisa says, that if you alter the language of the Torah, whether it be altering from Hebrew to Aramaic, or the few Aramaic that are in the Torah or elsewhere in Tanakh, like say for Daniel, and you translate it, you alter it into Hebrew, since you are departing from the original Lashon, the original language, it would invalidate that Sefer, it would invalidate the Torah. So the question is, how do I reconcile the Mishnah, in which the Tanakhama says that I could translate the Torah into any language I want, whereas the Braisa says I cannot translate it into any language that I want. I can't even go between Hebrew and Aramaic, which, definitely from a standpoint of speaking English, those are two very similar languages. So the Gemara offered a number of possible reconciliations, and we are going, there was four possible reconciliations, and now we're going to add on one more. Now, the reconciliation that we're going to offer now requires us to revisit our understanding of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Until this point, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion, we understood it as one could translate any sefer of Tanakh into Yavanis, into Greek. What the Gemara is about to suggest, actually, is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds that you could only translate, it's ironic when you think about it, you could only translate the Torah into Greek, but not Svarim from Nevi'im and from Ksuvim. Those you cannot translate into Greek and certainly not to any other language. Hence, the reconciliation between the Mishnah and the Braisa is that the Mishnah is saying that you can translate into any language, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about a Sefer Torah in the Mishnah, whereas the Braisa says you cannot translate it into any language. That Braisa is talking about Svarim that are found in Nach, which Rav Shimon Gamliel says cannot be translated into Greek. So until now, Rav Shimon Gamliel, we thought all Svarim and Tanakh had the same rule. Now we're saying there's a difference between Torah and between Nach. Ironically, it's the Torah that can actually be translated into Greek. Why, you might ask? Well, that will be something we explore tonight, shortly after this piece of Gemara. So without any further ado, let's actually see it inside. The reason I explained the reconciliation outside is because I wouldn't say the Gemara is convoluted per se, but there's a little bit of a back and forth, a little bit of a shock of Itaria. So I just wanted to make sure the reconciliation was clear before we get bogged down inside. Can I repeat it? Can I restate it? Is there any way I could clarify the question and the reconciliation that the Gemara offers? I'm happy to repeat if anyone wants me to. Okay, let's see it inside now. Rav Ashi Amar, Ki Tanya hi b'shar svarim. The Braisa, the way we reconcile our mission with the Braisa is that the Braisa that has a stricter ruling that you can't translate at all into any language is talking about shar svarim. What are shar svarim? Look in Rashi, Rashi says that's from Levim and Suvim. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, and it's in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Titania, Tfilin of Mezuzos ein nechtavin ela ashuris. It says in the Braisa that Tfilin Mezuzos cannot be written except in proper Hebrew. Now, who is Rabbi Senu, our rabbi? This refers to, Rashi says, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So Shimon Gamliel permitted it to be written in Greek. We learned this last week. It says the word v'hayu in the pasuk, which implies, like we learned last week, v'hayu means it should be written the way you found it originally. It said earlier in the Gemara, v'hayu b'hav yasan yiyu. The way you found the parshios of the mezuzah written in the Torah, i.e. in Hebrew, is how it should be written in the actual mezuzah and tefillin that you utilize. So it doesn't make sense that Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that you could translate a mezuzah or tefillin into Greek. Ella ima svar nechtavim mechol lashon, rabba sikva tirivanis. Rather, they're not talking about mezuzahs and tefillin, but they're talking about svarim in general. Svarim in general, the Tanakhama says, could be written in any language, like in our Mishnah. And Gamliel, just like in our Mishnah, says that it could only be written in Greek. Now, the issue with this interpretation of the Bryce presentation is the Lashon, the usage of the language Hetiru. Hetiru mechla de Tanakhama osar. The word Hetiru, that Rosh Gamliel was matir something, permitted something, that would suggest that the opinion that came before him assert something. But that's not actually true. The Tanakhama was the lenient position here. He said, you can write in any language that you want. And it was Rosh Gamliel who said, no, only Yavanis. So what's it mean that he was matir? What do you mean? He made things tougher for us. Ela ima rabosinu etir shiichtavu el Yavanis. Rather, you have to read as follows. Lohitir Shizuel Yavanis. He only permitted us to write in Greek. Okay, now I understand the language of the Braisa. What's the bottom line? Betania comes our friend Rabbi Yehuda, who we were just told about. Ravashi wants us to know about Rabbi Yehuda. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Av Kisha Tiru Rabosinu Yavanis. Even when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel permitted the Torah to be translated into Greek, lo etiru ela b'sefer Torah, he only permitted it for translating a sefer Torah, but not for other svarim, not for Nach. And why is this? Umishum ma'isa de Talmai HaMelech, because of the following story of King, how do you pronounce it in English? Talmi? Talmi the right translation? Okay.
Talmi. He is silent.
Talmi. Got it. Okay, thank you. I feel like that's like a classic, from Rabbi Yishtha. We don't have pronounced English names. It's like Esav is Esau, unless I got that one wrong. Okay. Someone can correct me. Or Esau. Okay, you know what? I don't know. So I'm just going to stop here. Now, okay, so just to repeat, what's the reconciliation? The Mishnah in which says, Rosh Hashanah Gamliel says, you can translate the Torah into Yavanis. It's talking about the Torah. The Brisa, which is even stricter, says you cannot alter a language at all, not even from Aramaic to Hebrew. That is talking about other Svarim that are in Nach. Now, why is the Torah different from the rest of the Nach, right? We're getting to Pesach. Why is this Sefer different from all other Svarim? So the following story will tell us why. And I would say if there's one thing you walk away knowing, if you didn't know this yet before, you remember this story, because this gets quoted a lot. Here we go. Ditanya, Maisa b'Talmai HaMelech, Shekinas Shivim Ushnayim Zekanim, that Talmai HaMelech, when he was in charge of Eretz Yisrael, a Greek king, he took 72 elders, presumably, these were elders on the Sanhedrin, he takes them, B'Nisan B'Shivim Ushnayim Batim, he puts them into 72 different houses. Vlogilahem Amakinson. He doesn't even tell them why they were arrested. They just, found a reason to arrest you. Apparently, in these dictatorial societies, they could just do that if they want to. The nichnas itzel kol echad ve'echad ba'amar lehem. And then, once each of the rabbis were isolated in their own houses, he said to them, "Ba'amar lehem, kisuli Torah Moshe Rabchem, write for me the entire Torah of Moshe, your teacher, in Greek." Nasar Hakadosh Baruch Hu believed kol echad ve'echad itza, and this is remarkable. Not only where did each and every one of them made the same way, but they all made alterations to the Torah in a way that they were going to present it to Talmai HaMelech. So God put in the hearts of each and every one of these sages, Eitzah, Eskimu Kum L'das Achas, and they all managed to have the same ideas. So what's going to happen now is we're going to go through a list of many different minor alterations they made to the Torah. Now, this is a good question to ask yourself. Excuse me. A good question to ask ourselves, and we gave a shiur on this a while ago, when we're talking about, is one allowed to lie to get someone to keep mitzvahs? So, for instance, if there's a mitzvah in the Torah that someone finds offensive, and otherwise I could get them on board to keeping the Torah, but if I tell them about this mitzvah, or if I don't hide this mitzvah from them, it will get them so upset that they won't want to keep the other 612 mitzvahs. Am I allowed to sugarcoat things? Am I allowed to censor things for the greater good? Now, this isn't talking about Kiriv. This is talking about PR, and a very important PR, because they don't want to be killed. They don't want the Jewish people to be killed. And what the rabbis were afraid is that they're depending on, if you don't read the Torah with the Gemara, you don't read the Torah with Midrashim, you don't read the Torah with the explanation of the sages, it could lead you to heretical conclusions, and it could also lead you to just to bad PR situations. Now, I'll stop elaborating on it because it sounds very abstract right now, but you'll see exactly what I mean in each and every one of these emendations that they make.
All right, that's a question.
Yes, Paul.
Actually, two questions. Are we talking about the ritual use of these books, or are we talking about the academic use of the books?
Right. So there seems to be, what we talked about in the Brisa was whether it's being metame siyadayim. So very good. There's two questions we have to ask over here. There's a question in general, was one question, like you said, which is, can it be used for ritual purposes? Is a safer Torah kosher? Then the second question we have to ask ourselves also is whether we are allowed to translate certain things. And this is a big controversy when Art Scroll first came out. They, I think they actually, if I'm not mistaken, when they were justifying what they did, I believe they made reference to this Gemara over here. So the question is, even just translating piece of the Torah. If you recall, actually, it was at the beginning of the Masechta, I believe it was Daf Gimel, if we remember, Yonasan ben Uziel translated Nevi'im, and Hashem became very angry with him. He said to him, "Mi hu zeh shegila sisrai lebnei Adam? Who's the one that revealed my secrets to Bnei Adam?" And so there seems to be an issue, forget about ritual purpose, like you said, but just with translating in general. So I think that's the issue that we have at hand over here. Just stop translating might already be a problem to a certain degree. So let's look over here at the story.
If I can interrupt a second.
Yeah.
For us to translate into another language, it's past that issue, because Goyim know Hebrew and they can translate for themselves. They can learn in Hebrew. So the purpose, if any, of not translating has evaporated.
Right. So it's interesting, though, because when Art Scroll started translating, I mean, they weren't the ones to translate the Gemara, but definitely did a good job elucidating it. So I think there was a concern, and you actually see this sometimes where you'll see like certain Christians on the internet, they'll find a line in the Gemara that's not very just like a lot of noise coming, so we did remute ourselves. So they'll basically find certain statements in the Gemara that are not so complimentary to non-Jews, then they'll post that somewhere, and that'll cause big issues. So why am I telling you these examples? We had this in the Gemara as well. Remember Esther Hamalka, which staff was it on? Said, Avuni Ledoros. Remember Esther Hamalka said, I want to be established for all future generations. And what did the Rabbanan say to her? They said that, what do you mean? It's going to lead to terrible things. They're good. Kina Atmo Reris Alina Labina Umos. The nations are going to want to kill us for if you translate this. And not just translate, but disseminate it. And for generations, people are going to want to kill us over what they read in the Torah. So it's been an issue.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
A halacha lamasle question. If Sifrei Kodesh are translated into English, Greek, Latin, whatever, what's the status of things that are falling apart? Sheamus, is this an issue for them?
Oh, very interesting. Right, because generally for Shemos, if it has Shem Hashem, or if it has Sukkim on it, would it very good. So in general, we do put even English translations in Shemos, but they're actually, it's a bit of a debate. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I have to check this up. I think Rav Moshe held that Hashem's name written in English doesn't have the same Shem Hashem status as if it was written in Hebrew. So it still needs to be discarded respectfully. Now, an interesting question that some postmen have dealt with is, let's say you have a sefer that was written, a heretical book. So, let's say you have a Christian translation of the Bible. So on the one hand, you have some sukkim in there that are legit sukkim. On the other hand, you have heresy in there. So how do you dispose of it? So I think the suggestion given, I have to check back, was it Rav Sternbach? I forgot which posting I was looking at. He said that you should put it in a bag and put the bag in the garbage. Because the issue is that if you're a little bit too zealous about what you put in Shemos, if I take a novel I read and I put it with Shemos, the novel being there is disrespecting the actual Shem Hashem that's there as well. So I think the suggestion I saw was to wrap it up in a bag and then put that in the garbage. So that way you're minimizing any disrespect of Sukkim. At the same time, you're not also causing an affront to the legitimate, authentic Svarim that are found in the Shemos. But that's a good topic. We should do that for a Monday night share. I like
Rabbi,
that.
Rabbi, I yes, heard that if it's not in in Lashon HaKodesh, and it's all bets are off, and it's doesn't have to even be buried with Shemos.
Right. So that was the suggestion that was given, which is that you put it in a bag, and then you put the bag in the paper garbage.
No, I didn't even know you needed to do that. That's something I never heard of.
That's a general catch-all. So, for instance, like your tzitzis after you cut them off, tzitzis don't have to be buried. But because they were something that was once used for a mitzvah or associated, they're supposed to be discarded in a respectful fashion. Same thing like with the lulav. The lulav after Yom Tov, your esrog, yes, they don't need to go into Shemos. Do not put any of it into Shemos, please. And don't throw your aravos on top of the ara. But nonetheless, they should be discarded in a way that's respectful, because they were once upon a time used for a mitzvah. So they're not Shemos, they're not Shem Hashem, they're not Psukim, but nonetheless they have to be discarded in a respectful manner. Okay? Very good. Good questions, everyone. Let's go forward. So what are these examples? What are these things in the Torah that they altered? So here we go. Here we go. Oh, by the way, just a question. You're like, oh, well, why don't we say anyone blamed from a Greek Sefer Torah? So the Kesef Mishnah says that, it'd be interesting, the Kesef Mishnah and others point out that we no longer have the original Greek language. The Greek today is not the same Greek that we had back then. Now, the funny thing is, I believe historians have figured out what the original Greek is. We found texts with actual Greek on it. So could we go ahead and write a Greek Sefer Torah today? That'd be interesting, no? Okay. So here, what was that?
No. Yeah,
it'd be fascinating, right? As if Sophros wasn't hard enough, you need to learn Greek now. Here we are. Detania, Maisa Talimach. Okay, so we did that already. What are the examples? Number one, Ukasulo Elkim Bara Bereshis, that God created the beginning. Why? Because if you read Bereshis Bar Elkim, one could mistakenly read it as this entity called Bereshis created God, and that's problematic. As the Adam Etzem Udumus, so notice originally God says to the angels, let us create man, but because we don't want them to be to read this and be led to idolatrous conclusions, therefore they changed it for Tamei HaMelech for to say, I will go ahead and create man. Example number three, that God stopped working on the sixth day and he rested on the seventh day. But in actuality, God, it says in the Torah that he finished on the seventh day. So the issue is that we don't want Talmai to think that God also worked on Shabbos, because then why are the Jews bothering keeping Shabbos? However, Rashi points out here that we have to ask ourselves a question. You know, if we're afraid that Talmai is going to misunderstand it, I don't know. Do I understand it? Wait a minute. Why does the Torah say that God finished his work on Shabbos itself? That implies that God produced something on Shabbos. So Rashi says, Dibar Maschu Vayichal B'Yom HaShishi, Shal Yomar Imkein Asei Malacha B'Shabbos, Taksiv Vayichal B'Yom HaShvi. Because someone would be led to say, I can work on Shabbos now, because this is Vayichal B'Yom HaShvi. Buhu Lo Yikabal of Midrash Chachamim. This is the big issue, when people read the Pesukim literally, but they don't read it with the Midrashim, with Chazal. The Medrash says, Shadarshu Bo Ma Hayahol Chasar Menucha, Basa Shabbos, Basa Menucha. So there's a Medrash that says that on Shabbos, God created Menucha, God created rest. And so we're going to talk about it in our Agada to share on Thursday mornings. For a number of you I know who are with us, we're going to talk about the Agada. What does it mean to create rest as its own entity? What does it mean to productively rest? Okay, but not for now. Zachar Nekeva Bra'ov Lo Kasu Baram. So what does it mean? So it says in Torah that God created them male and female. That makes it sound like they're originally two bodies, and each one was androgynous. Each one was male and female at the same time. So therefore, it switches to Baro to teach us that that God created one human being, Adam, and from there he split it into male and female. Hava Erda Vevla Hashem Tzvatzam. So when God is at the Tower of Babel, Migdal Bavel, God says originally to the angels, let us go down and alter their language and mix them up. But they change it to the singular, where God says, I will go ahead and mix it up. Next, Batitzchak Sarah Bikroveha, that Sarah laughed among her relatives, as opposed to inside. Why? Because, listen to this, that's in Rashi, Shel Yomar Avram Lo Hifkin, a Hikbin. So that he shouldn't think that the Torah was not makbid on Avram for laughing, but only makbid on Sarah. So to make things easier, again, to someone who's reading it without explanation, they said that Sarah laughed in front of her relatives, which sounds worse than what Avram did, where he just laughed to himself. He, Bapam Hargu Shor, but son of Ikru Evos. This pasuk is when Yaakov is describing how Shimon and Levi were responsible for different murders and for Yosef. So it basically, the original pasuk, if you look here, it's number Chaf. The original pasuk is, Besodam al tavo nafshi bekalam, al techa kvodi kivapam hargu ish, where it's on Ikru Shor. So we don't want to say in the Torah that they killed a man, and that they are responsible and culpable for it. So therefore, he changes the language to Shor and Avos instead. Next, by Yikach Moshe's Ishto Mesbana Be'arkivim al Nosei Bnei Adam. The Moshe took his wife and his children, his sons, and he placed them upon these things that carry human beings. What are these things that carry human beings? So really, it was, if you look, the implication is for a donkey. there's a lot of background noise coming from somewhere. I'm just going to do a general mute. But definitely unmute yourself if you have a question. Okay, there we go. All right. So, Vayikach Moshe Isha Vesbana Vayagim Al Nosim Ne'adam. It would be disrespectful or dishonorable. Like, this is Moshe, you're a leader, and he rides on a donkey, even though Mashiach's going to come on a donkey. So there's a certain level of humility to it. So therefore, it uses a vaguer language. The issue, you can look at Rashi for longer elaboration, is that we're only in Egypt for 210 years, yet it says we were there for 400 years. How do we make sense of it? So it really started all the way back from Yitzchak is when we start the count of 400 years. But again, because some people will be reading the Torah without the commentary, they had to add it to the pasuk, the words, Ubashar Artzos, and other lands, to show, to convey how the Gaulus, the exile of Egypt, started well before we actually went down to Egypt. And that's how we get to 400 years, even though we were only there for 210 years. By Yishlach, it's that two Tibnei Israel. So again, another change for PR purposes, that it originally says na'ar, use the lashon na'ar of young people. It's a little bit unbecoming that we use na'arim, we use like these young lads to honor the Torah. So therefore, it switches the lashon to zatute, which is more of a lashon of chashivas, as Rashi points out. Because we don't want them to say by Yomer Grum Shalachem Shalachem the Kalal Pnei Shechina that you sent the lowliest of you to greet the divine presence. Turning the page to Testament Beis. Here we go. Next pasuk that gets altered. Lochamad Echmeh Nusasi. So what gets changed over here? The word Chemed is switched with Chamor. So Moshe is saying, I didn't take anything from you guys. I was a good leader. So use the more general word of anything that is precious to you, as opposed to chamor, because if Moshe says, I didn't steal a donkey from you, well, someone cynically can read as, like the lawyers among us. He didn't steal a donkey from you, but maybe he stole a camel from you instead. So therefore, they had to alter the lashon here as well. So it says that God gave to the other nations these other gods, these celestial beings. So it says lit ha'ir, to provide light, because otherwise one can mistakenly read it as God is giving the celestial beings for non-Jews to worship. Therefore, they added the word lit ha'ir to say, the sun is there just to provide light and vitamin D or whatever it is that you get from it. It's not there for worshiping purposes. And you will go and you'll worship these other gods that I did not command you to worship them. So once again, if you look at the original pasuk, it's number Gimel. So therefore, they had to add in that I did not command you to worship them, because that might make it sound like, again, one can worship them. This is my favorite one, guys. This one's my favorite. The short-footed creature. What is this short-footed creature? Melissa, as you pointed out, it's in this week's Parsha. So we're going to talk about the Arneves, how we're not allowed to eat bunny rabbits, and even if it's rabbit season. Now, they changed the word. Why? Because the wife of Talmai HaMelech, his wife's name was Arneves. Her name was a rabbit. Apparently, that must have been a Greek name back then. So what would happen? So he won't get upset and say, you see these rabbis, they're trying to jab at me. So when they're listing all the non-kosher animals, they put my wife in there in order to ridicule me. So Rabbi, the rabbis were afraid of that happening. So therefore, they renamed the Arneves when they translated it into Greek.
Rabbi,
yes,
there's also another word. There's also another word for rabbit, a shafan.
Does that come up in the Torah?
I don't remember. I'm not sure.
Okay. So we well, this is the one given in the Gemara, but that's, you know, this one was just like an example. You have all these like theological things about Bodhisattva. This is like purely PR over here. So this would always entertain me. Okay. One last Gemara, piece of Gemara, and then we'll get to the Mishnah. We'll end off of that. So until now, we have a story about writing the Torah in Greek. But do we have perhaps a proof from the Psukim that could support this position of Rav Shimon Gamliel? So Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Afis Svarim lo etir shiutu el Yavanis. Shimon Gamliel permits Svarim to be written in Greek. Omer, Rav Yochanan, halacha for Shimon Gamliel. The halacha supports Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Yochanan, my time of Shimon Gamliel, Omer, Kra, Yifas el Yim Yafes, the Yishkom ba'olei Shem. What does that mean? The words of Yafes should be in the tense of shame. Shame is what the Jews descend from. Yafes was, was a good guy also, but that's not where the Jews come from. And the idea is that the words of Yafes will be in the tense of shame. And I think Rabbi Norman Lamb, when he was talking about Torah Manda, this was an agarata that he liked to quote. But wait. Yefes is, you know, closer to the beginning of creation. He has many descendants that came from him. He's one of three sons of Noah. Certainly, he has more descendants than just the Greeks. What about the Gomer Mago, who are also his descendants? Maybe you have to translate the Torah into their languages. Who's to say that this supports translating the Torah into Greek specifically? The beauty of Yefes, the Lashon of Yefes, the beauty of Yefes should be in the tense of shame. And apparently Greek was believed to be a aesthetically beautiful language. And so for that, it would still be respectable to translate the Torah into Greek. And with that, that brings us to our Mishnah on Tes Amud Beis. Let me pause. Do we have any questions? Oh, Paul, you're muted there.
I have to ask the question. I mean, these seem like almost trite explanations, almost comical explanations.
Yeah.
There's got to be another reason here. These has to be, it can't be because they're afraid a wife's name is going to look incorrect in the Greek.
Yeah. So let's put it this way. Now, I understand what you're saying, meaning you're, because of a PR issue, you're going to change the words of the Torah. So I think what we have to understand also is that translations, when Targumim are done, even in Aramaic, even if you read Unkelus, you read Targum Rabbi Yonasan, many Targumim are not word-for-word translations, but they'll generally contain an extra word here or there to serve also as a parish, as an explanation. So for instance, there's something that most of us men do is Shnai Mikravecha Targum. It's not so easy, but I try to do it. Where you, every week, you go through the Torah in Hebrew twice and once with the translation. Now, why is it, what's the point of the Targum? The point of the Targum isn't just to translate for me, but it's to explain the Torah for me. And so different Targumim will not only translate, but provide explanation. So with that in mind, the rabbis here weren't being unfaithful to the Torah when they did this. They say, take the first example, for instance. The first example that we had was Elkim Bar Bereshis, that God created in the beginning. That still conveys the same point. You know, you can't get a perfect literal translation. So it's inherently a little bit loose with explanation. Now, you'll notice all the things that the rabbis change aren't untrue. They're just there to prevent misinterpretation for the most part. So for instance, you look at... You look over here, you know, you don't want to misunderstand that it was God creating creating things with angels' help. Like he invited the angels in as a nice gesture, but God doesn't need the angels to create different things in the world to affect change. You know, that's the Rabbag talks about how God acts through the angels in the world. God can't touch the world directly. There's some interesting ideas out there. But the point being is that Targum is inherently not literal and is actually meant to fill the in between the lines to a certain degree.
You know, I personally find it very believable that a tyrant would create a bloody path in his wake if he thought you were ready killing his wife's name. And I can think of Putin as an example.
Well, wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, definitely the notion of dictators are on our minds right now. And well, our learning, God willing, should be a sluice, and hopefully Akash Baruch Hu should bring peace speedily in our days. All right. Take care, everyone. Thank you for those joining us on the computer and in person, and wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and God willing, see you then. Take care.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Good night. All right, Zadie, happy birthday to Bubby again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.